for years and years and years. It's all save, save, save when it comes to retirement. But once people actually get there, it can be difficult to figure out how to spend that money. Even with the help of professional advisors, drawing down one's savings in retirement, something very few retirees do well. Fred Vitesse joins us now. He's chief actuary at Morneau Chappell and the author of a new book called Retirement Income for Life, a five-step game plan for turning your life savings into income that will last. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce.
I'm so glad that this book is here because we talk so much about the savings part and so little about what's called the decumulation phase. First, let's define the term. What do you mean when you talk about decumulation?
Decumulation is an ugly word. It means drawing down your savings in retirement.
Yeah.
That's all it means.
And
it's the opposite of accumulation,
right?
What you've been doing all your whole life up until that point.
Why is that so difficult for people? Even if they've saved well, there's enough money there. Why is it so difficult?
There's a bunch of reasons why it's difficult. First of all, it's difficult to figure out how to draw it down the best possible way, but it's also psychologically difficult. And that's because our self-worth is kind of tied up with our assets. So
yeah.
We kind of see our assets growing our whole lifetime as we salt away more and more money. And then all of a sudden, in the decumulation phase, you're starting to draw it down, so the stockpile is getting a little smaller every year.
It's going to run out!
And your self-worth is kind of tied in with that as well. I mean,
yeah.
It's a reminder that you're not going to be around forever.
You mentioned two other factors that make it difficult: children and financial advisors. What do you mean?
Financial advisors make it difficult because they tend to be saying, and I don't want to make a sweeping statement, but I will, they tend to be saying the exact opposite of what the academics are saying. So the academics are the ones who really research this. They have the PhDs behind them, or they're actuaries. They've studied this. They have no vested interest. And what they're saying is, in terms of how you ought to be drawing down your money in retirement, is virtually exactly the opposite of what the financial advisors are saying.
And they're saying hold on to it because their fee is related to the assets they have under management.
Right. They tend to be saying, yeah, draw your CPP as soon as possible. Try taking your CPP pension as possible, and then don't touch your RSP as much as you can avoid it.
Now, there is tons of debate on this question, and that is, how much income does one need to support oneself? What is one thing that you would say to cut through the clutter on that whole discussion that people should keep in mind?
Well, I would say it's kind of a moot point at this point. I'm writing this book for people who actually already saved, and so you've got what you've got. Now, what you want to do is you want to draw a safe amount of income every year. So I'm saying you got to live within your means at this point in time. Yeah, you really have no choice anymore.
You write about enhancements. What do you mean by enhancements?
Okay.
And we're going to go through all five, but first define what do you mean?
Okay.
How do you enhance the amount that you have to spend in the decumulation phase?
I'm enhancing both the amount you can spend as well as the amount you can spend safely so that you ought to be worrying less. I mean, obviously, people can always spend more money in the early years. That might make them feel good for a while, but then they end up worrying about whether it's going to actually last them a lifetime. So I start off the book with an example of a couple who are apparently doing everything right,
yeah,
but in spite of that, they still run short of money by age 80. So the enhancements make sure you don't run out of money by age 80, but they don't do it by having you being overly conservative when you're 65.
There are five. The first one we talk about all the time on this show, which is reduce investment fees. The second is delay CPP to age 70. How come?
Delaying CPP to age 70. But the reason you do it, the short answer is you are transferring both your longevity risk as well as your investment risk back to the government. So the government is saying, if you do this, we will increase your CPP pension by at least 42%. I say at least. It can actually be more than that, depending upon what wage inflation does.
Wow.
So they're going to increase it by at least 42%, no matter how long you live. And that's going to grow with inflation for the rest of your life if you live until 104.
Who should do that and who should not do that? Because I would bet there are people at the lower end of the spectrum who think, well, I don't care how much the payment is when I'm 70. I need the money now.
Yeah. Well, first of all, this ends up making a lot of sense in general, for people who have actually got savings. So they've actually got enough money, and by enough, I mean maybe $200,000 in savings. Enough money that they can draw their savings first before they start drawing their CPP. So let's say they retire at sometime in their 60s. From that age until 70, they're largely drawing their savings and their old age security, by the way. So they draw that too. And they hold off in drawing their CPP until age 70.
Third enhancement is purchase an annuity. It seems to me to make tons of sense. What's the debate about it? Why isn't everyone saying, hey, this is a great way to guarantee a fixed income for as long as you live?
The problem with purchasing an annuity for most people, first of all, it's for most people, it's kind of binary. They kind of say, I'll do it with all my money or I won't do it at all.
Right.
And it shouldn't be binary. You should be thinking about purchasing with maybe 30% of your money.
Right.
From my testing.
Right.
But it's the same problem with as with people having qualms about taking their CPP at age 70. And that is, I found one of the first things I discovered when I was writing this book is that what people say they want in retirement is not what they actually want. People say they want to make sure that the money is going to last them a lifetime. They don't want to outlive their savings. That's what they say. What they actually want is they don't want to look foolish if they die young.
Ah, right.
And if they and if you're going to look foolish if you die young and you bought an annuity the year before.
Right.
Now, obviously, you're dead at this point in time, but that doesn't matter.
They still
don't want to look foolish, even posthumously. And the and of course the same thing with CPP at age 70. You die young. You didn't take your fair share of the CPP. So that's what people are really most afraid of for some reason. Even if they say what they really want is to make sure that the money lasts a lifetime.
With an annuity, if you're married, you have a spouse. What happens if you die? Does the beneficiary become your spouse? Is it a portion of the payment that you got?
It depends upon how you set it up. And I would be recommending that people be taking out a joint and survivor annuity. That would be the kind where it would reduce it can reduce on either death, either your death or your spouse's death. And I think that's how it ought to be, by the way,
right?
Because your overall needs are going to be reducing in any event. And so you should be looking at an annuity that's going to be paying about 2/3 as much after the first death, for the rest of one's lifetime.
Enhancement 4, adjust spending habits, which people are terrible at doing this during their working life. Do you really think we can expect them to do that in retirement?
I hope so. But the thing is that they need to know how they can do it. I didn't know myself as to how I can do it until I actually created this, what I call Enhancement 4. It's a calculation tool. And I had written 98% of the book, and then I let the book sit for like 2 or 3 months trying to finish it off. And I figured up until this point, it's just words. I mean, I haven't actually told people how they can figure out how much income they can actually draw. And without giving them a roadmap as to how they can do that, the book was almost useless at that point in time. So Morneau Chappell, my employer, and I, through our IT team, we developed a calculation tool that's available at enhancement4.morneauchappell.com. And you put in about 25 pieces of data for yourself, another 25 pieces of data for your spouse, maybe less than that. And what it does is it then shows you a range of how much money you can draw in retirement. And it gives you a safe target, the amount that you can draw no matter what happens, in spite of what we've been seeing in the stock market for the past couple of days, and the amount of money that you can probably draw. So it's like two goalposts, and you want to keep your income between those goalposts at all times, which means you keep on going back to Enhancement 4 every couple of years just to make sure that you're still in between the goalposts.
Now that you've built that tool, how far off does the traditional 4% withdrawal rate seem? Is that a ridiculous benchmark in that context? Or
do you know what? I actually haven't tested it to see whether or not the 4% works or not. And I would say the answer probably is going to be the usual answer of it depends.
Right.
Now, in the first chapter of the book, though, I had the couple using the 4% rule, and with that 4% rule, they ran out of money by age 80. Now, 4% rule is going to be fine if your assets are going to be behaving themselves and you get a return of 5 or 6 or 6, 7% a year. But if you don't, then it could be very deadly.
We only have about 30 seconds left, but I want your one scenario in which a reverse mortgage makes sense, the most logical one. This was enhancement number 5. You called the reverse mortgage the distant cousin who started smoking at 13 and writing graffiti in the school washroom your mother warned you to stay away from, which is not an inaccurate characterization in some respects. But you do believe that reverse mortgages have a role. What is the specific demographic that they are a good fit for?
Reverse mortgages are good for people over 75 who really need the money, not to enhance their lifestyle, but maybe just to maintain the lifestyle they've got.
Worth
Simple
considering.
Answer.
Yeah, worth considering. Fred, thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is a new book that provides some real value to people. So Fred Vitesse, Chief Actuary at Morneau Chappell and author of Retirement Income for Life.